Penny Harris with Listen Here. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Thursday, October the 4th, the day after, dare I say it, the great debate between President Barack Obama and his Republican challenger, Mitt Romney, the former governor of Massachusetts. Well, today, I did say yesterday, is going to be the forum, and we are going to disassemble, dissect, analyze what went on last night. That was your homework assignment, and so the program today is an open forum, but it's not going to be a free-for-all in that sense. What I want is your considered opinions based on the discussions that we've had here about how you listen for what is not said and how you look for what is not easily or readily visible. Of course, we had so many different takes on this debate. Personally, as I said to you even yesterday before the debate, it held no particular excitement for me because I had an idea of where it was going to go. It was a bit surprising, but we'll get into that when you come in with your questions and calls and comments at 1-888-874-4888. But we have to understand this in its broader perspective. Just like the Democratic National Conventions and the Republican Conventions recently held were Hollywood productions. Millions and millions of dollars spent on elaborate sets and patriotic kitsch everywhere, you know, the stars and stripes and the eagle and the backdrops of the Bill of Rights and the U.S. Constitution, all this kind of stuff, lighting, great lighting, live bands, high-tech audio stuff and VIP sections and glitzy after parties and the like, all that razzle-dazzle was meant essentially to be part of the package, a sales package. It's a marketing package. It's supposed to communicate prosperity. These are parties going somewhere. And each of the parties had as its mission to sell the idea that it would be a wise choice for the American electorate to cast their fate with the individual parties, whether Republican or Democrat. Just look how great we are. But essentially, of course, it was party business. In my view, conventions need not get all that much coverage because it actually is party business. It's the party talking to itself, the party selling itself to itself, preaching to the choir. It would be news if conventions were about self-examination in public, where they publicly admit where they went wrong or what they're missing or how they're failing or what they intend to do. But that's not what conventions are for. They're not going to admit any mistakes. Their whole point is to convey perfection. We are the proper and correct choice. And if you had any sense, you would cast your lot with us. That's essentially what conventions are for. And you know, if you followed the tone of the way the journalistic community covered these events for the most part, they fell into lockstep with that. Because we had a Hollywood type coverage. You know, they began to, seasoned reporters are talking things like, how people were dressed, you know, their how the speeches were delivered and who spoke the best and who had best intonation and who got the most applause and how long the ovations were and did the event go with or without a hitch, that kind of stuff. Now, this is the journalistic core covering conventions because, according to the media, this is supposed to be significant to us as the public, as the voting public. But they were part and parcel of that illusion that something really important was happening in Tampa. And something really important was happening in South Carolina that was of grave importance to our lives. This was a major national, these were major national events. And the substance of the coverage was as if they were covering the Emmys or the Tonys or some Hollywood type event. But interestingly, as you listen to the tone of coverage last night, the media switched up, but only a tiny little bit. They still retained the Hollywoodization of politics, you know, that's as their way of covering such an event. But then they added a little bit to the Hollywood tinsel. They went now into sports. It was like a blood sport. And even before things got underway, we were hearing phrases like, you know, who would deliver the knockout punch and so forth. And this kind of sports lingo was now added to the previous Hollywood-type coverage to produce some really incredible things from seasoned journalists. I was watching this with amazement. Post-debate, the sports lingo continued. You had, NBCNews.com talked about Romney botching both the attack and defense lines, as if he were playing football. The LA Times said that neither Mitt Romney nor President Obama appeared to land a knockout blow. This is journalism, folks. The Washington Post: Romney takes the fight to Obama. The New York Daily News sported the headline, Mitt Whams Bam, and its competitor across town, the New York Post, countered with Mitt Mauls O. Well, so much for thoughtful analysis for the media. You know, it was amazing. And it still is. They're still talking that kind of language. Television gave us the visual equivalent of that. And lots and lots and lots of political gurus and analysts and teams of them, panels of them from every network, everywhere. And they were busy pondering and predicting and prognosticating about something they simply could not ponder, predict, or prognosticate about. Because after all, folks, it was a debate. And you just simply had to have things go to their natural conclusion before you would know what the result was. So all of that thinking to tell people, oh, this is really, 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 really important. And the talking ad nauseum about this outcome and could they predict what the big issues would be tonight. When it's all tailored, it's all done, it's all set out. It was just ridiculously simplistic. In fact, offensive, I think, that the standard at the bar was set so low and it was equally or doubly offensive that there would be this triumph. it was said to be a triumph by Mitt Romney that he hurdled over a bar set so low. But you wonder how the rest of the world sees this. Now, I was born in Trinidad, a little speck of dust in the Caribbean Sea. But I tell you, we know a debate. We know a debate. And you don't get up there and, you know, you go through all these permutations and you have all these, you know, people signing off on questions and all these different rules and whatnot to a debate. You're having a debate. We are used to a debate. Bring your best brain to this debate. That's not what happened here. I'm still waiting. For years I've been waiting for a real debate on issues. Hasn't happened yet. Before I go any further, let me tell you the task here today, and this is why we're opening up the phones at 1-888-874-4888. I did say to you yesterday, you are the analysts. I don't want to get too far into analysis. It is your job. It is your time. It is your space to deconstruct this, particularly paying attention to those things that we say are important. What was not said? What was significant? And the symbolisms. And there was so much of it because it's part and parcel of the psychological packaging that has to occur as part of the so-called political process. This is what happens. This is all part of the marketing. That's all it is. This is not an effort to educate the public. If anybody is under such a delusion, I mean, it's your fault. This is marketing. This is about winning hearts and minds, getting those votes, getting those folks who are undecided to get up and get energized and go. Just all they want is for you on election day to go to the polls and pull the lever in their favor. That's all they want. And this thing masquerading itself as a debate is a conspiracy by all the parties involved. The media knows this is not a debate. Imagine how silly Jim Lehrer should feel this morning as a veteran journalist sitting there posing vapid questions that would elicit vapid answers. He mustn't feel too good this morning. But that's part of what goes on. It's part of the package. We will give the illusion that this is what America means by democracy. And by the way, of course, the two political parties and only those two political parties are represented. And isn't it symbolic that the two candidates have as a backdrop the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights, and they are excluding others from participating in what should be a national debate. And they're talking about democratic rights. And this is a great democracy. So we have to take this all in and we have to see it for what it is. It is not a make or break, despite the fact that the political pundits are selling this, even the media still selling this to us as a legitimate and momentous thing, that you would be just about unpatriotic if you should find this to be merely incidental to your awareness and your reality as a member of the electorate. But it is embarrassing. And if anything, made the case that the time has come to definitively end this heinous practice, this undemocratic practice, to exclude from national participation and debate other political parties. What are your thoughts? What did you observe? What do you think came across most profoundly to the observer? These are our questions today in our open forum. We'll take this short break and come back right to your questions. I want you to be incisive. I want you not just to go all over the place, but you want to zero in. Don't behave like Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. Okay? We'll come back right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, I'm Eutrice Lead, and first up is Dave from Brooklyn. Dave?
Hi, Eutrice.
Hi.
I can't add all that much to what you already said, except one thing that I could possibly observe is that Romney changed his tune a lot in this and tried to sell himself as this really nice guy. He's not going to do all these cruel things that everybody has thought he was going to do. He's not going to take away your Social Security. And so he was trying to recast himself as a nice guy, maybe a rebirth of the compassionate conservative or something. Now, other than that, and Obama, oppositely, just presented himself the same way he did as in the 08 debates against McCain, where he was, you know, where McCain was, to use sports metaphors again, McCain was this really heavy hitter who was just taking wild swings and trying to, you know, a real slugger, and Obama was this boxer who was moving in, you know, little ring generalship. And so Obama tried the same thing again this time, but it didn't work with Romney because Romney is not a wild swinger. He knows what he's doing, and he didn't come off as this nasty old man like McCain did. He came off as this really compassionate guy. Well, he was trying to come off as this really compassionate guy, and so that was more effective than Obama's strategy: be very professorial and, you know, reasonable, and because it didn't work against Romney. It worked well against McCain. It didn't work against Romney.
But what did anything surprise you?
No, nothing.
Nothing surprised you.
No, I thought that Romney would start to come off as a moderate conservative, like the way he won in Massachusetts. I expected that, and of course they were both totally hypocritical. They were lying through their teeth, both of them. So what surprise could there be? I don't know. At least I didn't see any surprises, I'm sure.
What would you say, then, was the most instructive thing? As you review the events of last night, what for you was the most instructive thing that came out of that?
Just what I said about Romney recasting himself as a really nice guy, and he's not going to do all these cruel things to the poorer people in the United States. Just that.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot, Dave. Thanks
you're
for
welcome.
Chiming in. Pam from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hi, Pam.
Hi. I think our only hope is to vote for somebody, if we all get together and vote for somebody like Rocky Anderson, who's anti-war, anti-coal and nuclear, and for solar and geothermal and water and wind power, and he wants to close the Federal Reserve. And he's for helping the poor. Now,
Rocky Anderson is the candidate from the Justice Party.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And I listened to one sentence of Obama, and that's all I could take. He said, and it really wasn't even last night's debate, I don't think. I heard him say he wants to help the middle class become stronger, that's all I heard, and I turned it off.
Now, let me give you a quiz question. Can I give you a quiz question, Pam? Can I give you a quiz question? What word were you expecting, or might you have been expecting to hear from Obama that I didn't hear him say it last night.
No, it was another time I heard a.
What was the word?
That he wanted to help the middle class become strong, and I just felt that he doesn't care about the middle class, and you know, I doubt if he even said how he's going to do that. And I doubt if he said anything about helping the poor.
Well, actually, that was the word. The word I was hoping to hear from Obama that he did not seem to say, I may have missed it, but I was looking for it, I was listening for it, I never heard it. It was poor. Now, who said it, oddly enough, was Romney. It did not come out of the mouth of Barack Obama last night. He was very careful about that, very deliberate about that, it seems. Thanks, Ben, for joining us today.
Okay, I couldn't even listen to it because I can't listen to a bunch of people lying.
I know. But you did your homework. Thanks for doing that. Joe from Jersey, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Joe. I've been part of the Occupy movement from the beginning, and I was kind of watching this. I watched it through Democracy Now! To try to get a better thing. But, you know, I feel like it's like watching a past civilization. I feel like there's a collective unconscious that has moved so past this kind of thing that sometimes I find it really hard to even, it's like they're not even speaking English anymore. And what my takeaway is I know plenty of people that aren't voting at all. They don't care, they just had it. This is my issue. The only reason I'm voting is because there's 3 Supreme Court justices seats up. I don't want my daughter, who is 15, and the next generation to have to suffer because I sat on the couch and on my clock, I allowed 3 Supreme Court justices that have views that I do not agree with rule the land. So I walked away thinking, it was all just like, the Charlie Brown thing was like, wah, 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 and I think the thing is that I watched them, I swear, it's gotten to a point where I it's like play acting, it's like this, and like, I agree with you, the whole sports thing analogy and stuff, it's like, do we really have we gotten this, are we really have gotten to a point where we have the common denominator, the lowest common denominator, like it's got to be made into a miniseries or nobody will watch it, just like Iraq, war was a miniseries and everything else is a miniseries. And I think that I've boiled it down to that I think that the three Supreme Court justices is the most important thing on the table. And that's it for me. And I'm going to vote.
But, let me ask you, Joe.
Yes, sure.
I mean, I'm taking your point of view very seriously because what you're highlighting is huge within the United States. A lot of people just can't believe that at this point in history, this is the best we've got. This is what we have in light of all the serious problems that we have confronting us, that this is the ammunition that they're asking us to fight with. I mean, it's got to be better than this.
I think if I learned anything from the Occupy movement, I learned that sometimes you have to overlook certain things just to get, there's certain issues that are more important than anything. And I really am on my time clock, this Supreme Court thing, I just feel like I owe it to other generations to do the right thing. And I think right now, Obama's just talking the talk. I think he's going to loosen up once he got a second thing, because then he doesn't have everybody on it, nipping at his heels. But, I'm from Princeton, New Jersey, and I think people have to start looking at their local community. We have a college in our town that has a $17 billion endowment, and there's day workers on the side of the street with nothing, and they don't care. So I personally am working locally to fight power and money, And I think that's the way it's going to have to be. We're just all going to have to tend our own gardens and hope that one day all these gardens, become a nation again. But I think that the focus has to be like, it can become really...
But can
I
challenge you here a little bit, Joe?
Okay.
If you take that position, are you not, in fact, fulfilling a predetermined plan that there will be people like you and like me who would say, you know, I'm done. I've just had it. I'm out of this. So, we become the part of the 47%.
I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is I think there's two ways of coming at the situation. You know, what I'm saying is I really do believe in the concept that you throw a stone in the water and the ripple effects can go. And I just feel like I think the thing is if people are disillusioned about what's going on between these two men, then go over to your neighbor's house and say, listen, what do you think? And what do you think? And what do you think we could do? What could we do just in our community? And I think everyone keeps screaming about this third party. Third parties are going to start local. So I am thinking about starting a party here in Princeton, and it's going to be based on the Transcendentalist, and it's going to be called the Emerson Party. So I'm just going to, I'm throwing my hat in the ring. You know, I'm from Ireland, and we do this kind of thing every once in a while when we've had enough. And I just, I have hope, but I just beg people to think about the Supreme Court thing right now. Forget the miniseries, forget the miniseries for a little while and just focus just on that. And that at least gives you one focus. That's all I'm saying. And then tend your garden, become the person. I think that I think America has to become, people have to become who they are when no one's looking. That's who you are when no one else is looking and you're sitting there, whatever you're doing, that's who you are. I think that, I don't know, that's what I'm going to try to do. And what that has got, I went back to school, became a social worker, I got out of the corporate business, I'm working with the homeless, I'm doing what I can, and that's all I can do. And I hate that I'm being forced to get involved in politics, but it seems like I'm going to have to. So that's what I'm doing.
Well, thank you very much, Joe. That was a very profound contribution you've made today to the program. I thank you for that. Ruth from New York, you're up next.
Hi, Yatrice. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
About last night, what always amazes me is that you have two very highly educated, experienced men who, in 45 minutes, irrespective of what Mr. Lehrer did or did not do, said virtually nothing to the American people about anything. And
correct.
That is the most disturbing thing to me of all. I mean, I'm an English major. I've done a lot of writing. I've been an attorney for over 25 years. And I look at how people communicate, and I listen to every single word. And no matter what style you took, whatever position you took, whatever party you belong to, neither person really said much of anything about anything specific, whether it was about the homeless or the veterans or the poor or the minorities or immigration, domestic, just because we were in domestic issues last night. Nothing. People are in our nation are literally starving. They're eating cat food. Some families eat cat food. They don't have any money for anything. They don't have any health care. And we all know what the problems are. People are losing their homes. They have no place to live. They're living in cars in the greatest and the freest nation in the world. So with that backdrop, with two men to spend 45 minutes saying nothing, no specifics on what they're going to do to bring the parties together to reach across the aisle, was very, in a word, disappointing.
Well, Ruth, I have to challenge you. How could you say they didn't say very much when we had all these journalists? I mean, for weeks leading up to this event, and last night, and today, and tomorrow, and the next day, are telling us how profound this event was. A lot was said, even though not said. But there was a lot to analyze. There was a lot to translate for the American people, because so much, this thing was so profound. So how is it that you could say that not much was said? They're telling us a lot was going on there.
I love your question. Listen to the journalists the same way that you listen to the two candidates, Mr. President and Mr. Governor. There was nothing. The journalists, you know, whether they're in, essentially mainstream media last night, if you're watching mainstream media, were not, they were saying the same thing over and over and over again. And then they were trying to come out with new tweaks on the same angle. Well, he was louder and stronger. This guy looked more professorial. I felt like screaming out, well, he was trying to look like Abraham Lincoln, President Obama. We could theorize about a lot of things, but the bottom line is even those so-called analysts in the media, they weren't saying anything new last night either, and that, too, was disappointing to me. I was screaming at my television set. And
you
I
know what did it for me? When I saw CNN reporters heading toward, first the anchor person said, and now I forgot the name of the reporter, from the spin room.
Oh, yes.
So then they dispatched a reporter who's supposed to be, you know, giving us an independent analysis of things, sent the reporter into the spin room, where a spin doctor for the Republican Party was waiting, anticipating the interview, and she dutifully interviews the spin doctor and files it as a bona fide report. And then the anchor comes back and says, oh, thank you, that was so-and-so from the spin room. And I'm going, somebody has at CNN, has somebody needs to go to journalism school. Somebody's lost his or her natural mind.
You read
it
my
used
mind.
To be when people used to call them spin doctors. That's a pejorative. That's not a good thing. And now CNN was presenting it as legitimate journalism that they're doing.
Unfortunately, you are. I mean, I agree with you. Unfortunately, we use the word journalism today, but journalism is no longer journalism. I was very much involved in journalism in junior high school. We won an award at Columbia University. I was just a teenager. That was during the Vietnam War years. And I'm 57 now. And today's journalism is not true journalism. It's taking an angle on something. It's not giving both sides of the story. It doesn't follow the rules of journalism. And so whenever I talk to people about, well, how do you evaluate all of this stuff? I say, go back to, hit the books. Look up what journalism really is supposed to be. Look at definitions of what is rhetoric. This was all rhetoric last night. Rhetorical angles from both parties or both sides, but no true information or facts. Nothing truly was said. I mean, I think President Obama gave us a little bit more in specifics, but with all the articulate ability that these men have, they said nothing, truly said nothing in 45 minutes. They should have been banging out these factual numbers and figures and plans in the first 10 minutes. They should have said everything. And it shouldn't have taken 45 minutes for us to wait on with bated breath to hear essentially nothing. And that's what happened to us last night as Americans. I think that's why the CNN and the CSNBC reporters sat back looking like they were ready to either throw up or pass out or have a heart attack, because it really was so frustrating. It was, you can't analyze nothing. They couldn't analyze it. There was nothing to analyze.
There's nothing to analyze.
That's, in my humble opinion, there's nothing to analyze. There was nothing said.
Politically, what did that do to fix your political stance in this presidential election year?
Well, we really have a choice today to not vote, which I never believe is a good idea, because we must exercise our right to vote. So we can either vote for Mr. Romney, President Obama, or Mr. Anderson. Those are three known things we can do. But I know I've pretty
You're
much
leaving out Jill
Stein? Who I'll vote for. Excuse me?
You're leaving out Jill Stein, Green Party?
Green Party, yeah, and the other, yes, and the Green Party. There are other candidates. But, I mean, as far as, vote for anyone that you believe in, but don't not vote. And we must, in my opinion, what I will do is I will continue not to just work toward a particular candidate's position, but I will also continue on a local level to explain to people how important one person's acts can be in a nation of so many wonderful Americans. One person can make a difference. A small group of people can make a difference. We know this historically. Mother Teresa taught us this. Martin Luther King taught us this. You don't have to be a martyr to know this. This is something that I will continue to do, is to just educate people to read, listen, question, and don't ever believe that you, just you, housewife, or you, student, or you, husband or father, cannot make a huge, huge difference in any act that you take to save this great nation and propel us in the right direction again. I mean, many people have died in many wars so that we could have what we have today and have the freedoms that we have, which are greater than any in the world. And I think back to our founding fathers all the way up through my father being World War II and all of the other men and women who have sacrificed their lives or parts of their bodies so that we can be here having this discussion today. So I apologize for going on, but I will continue along that path of saying don't ever think that you alone cannot make a difference. And I agree with your last caller that we must form our own groups of people and get the word out. Don't be riveted to your television and paralyzed by that type of a debate as if that's the end vote. It's not. The day we vote is what's going to determine what happens. And
well,
then what we do thereafter will determine what happens here.
Thank you so much for your contribution today. Thank you. Very profound. Now, if only we can multiply these sentiments that the established order does not have to be acceptable, and it isn't. And it is exceedingly disappointing that the media are such an integral part of this farce, to tell people that what they're seeing, you know, it's like Groucho Marx with that classic line when he was caught philandering with somebody else's girlfriend, and he says, "Do you believe me or your lying eyes?" It's the same thing. We're watching it. We're experiencing it. And the media are telling us what we're seeing, what we're witnessing, is not real, because this is profound. This is very deep stuff. This is democracy. And we have to trust that our instincts are, in fact, correct. We are witnessing a sleight of hand. We are witnessing a dumbing down. We are witnessing people, as James Brown said, talking loud and saying nothing. That's what we're witnessing. Hello, you're on the air. Are you there, caller? Okay, we don't have a call. 1-888-874-4888. Let me see. Pam, you're on. Hello? Yes, you're on the air. Okay, we're having some difficulty there. Well, the point I'm making is, it is clear to many, But it could only become clear when you consciously, you know, put your brain in motion and you see the thing for what it is. It's there in your face. They're not hiding this. Both Mitt Romney and Barack Obama did not come to this debate to actually tell anybody anything. They came to score points, strategic points. Has nothing to do with what the American people need to know. Has nothing to do with the health, the political and economic and social health of this country. It has only to do with what points they can score in order to invigorate that part of the electorate that they need. And they know that that part of the electorate that they need. You notice the certain things that they did, you know, the stories that illustrate compassion or the points, and they go into these sidebars to elicit this emotional identification with them. That's what it's all about. Deal with me. I'm a human, and we talk about this all the time. Nowhere is there a general sense that what is at stake is the future of the country. Not if you listen to these folks last night. It's about who needs to score the most points to win. And the media, the performance of the media was atrocious. Atrocious. If I had it within my will, by the time they got back to their desks, they would have pink slips because they failed utterly, or maybe not. Maybe that was the whole point, to seem to look authoritative about something that had no substance, to create an illusion of substance where there was no substance. And there's a reason for that, too. The reason is between now and Election Day, both the Romney and Obama campaigns will be spending hundreds of billions of dollars in advertising money. And this is the way the networks show their appreciation for the investment. They have all these panels and all the bells and whistles and the maps and the, you know, all the data and support staff and teams of analysts and all of this to make it appear that something is happening, but really what they're saying to their paying customers, that's the different political parties, is that we are giving you added value for the money you have been investing with us. That's exactly what it is. They're getting a healthy return on their investment. The Republicans have spent hundreds of millions. The Democrats have spent a bunch of millions. By the time it's all said and done, both parties in the presidential campaigns and in congressional campaigns would have spent almost $7 billion this year just in advertising money for campaigns. So you see the incestuous relationship. But it is a good thing that people are beginning to decipher and read the landscape very accurately. They're beginning to make these connections, and they're beginning to see, like Joe in New Jersey, that it isn't enough to object, or like Ruth in New York. It isn't enough to just object. It is important to construct your own alternative based on your own reality. And you see it. You see it right there. Nobody has to instruct you further as to what it is happening before your very eyes. And that's the lesson. That's the lesson. We have another call, do we? No, not yet. All right. I want to talk to you about tomorrow. We'll be doing some other things related. You know, I'm hoping that you're connecting the dots here too, and that is that the programs that we're doing are meant to provide ammunition for us to broaden our horizons and widen our vision, and that we go back to these things and apply them so that when these major events, as they call them, happen, and they are staged for us with the intention of persuading us, we have an entirely different point of reference on these things. We come to these events prepared. We are intellectually prepared. We're not easy to persuade because we have an entirely different point of reference. That is important. You heard Bernie Sanders yesterday talk about why Americans are angry. And I tell you, if he had made that speech last night, he would have been president of the United States. I mean, this is what is missing. Here's a U.S. senator speaking passionately, to the point, laying out a plan of action, laying out solutions, clear about what the challenges are, and clear also about what could be done to meet the pressing needs of the vast majority of Americans who are suffering. Why can't we get that from a president? Why can't we get that from a challenger? The political system, no matter which side of the aisle you look on, it's useless now. And in fact, dangerous to our interests. Because you see, this is not to be government by the people for the people. This is government isolated from the people. Government insulated against the people. Government, in fact, despite the people. Is that really what we want? And this media question, I'm going to go on this thing because I'm a journalist, and it took me a long time to acquire my experience and skills, and I have a great sense of pride about that. And to see what these folks are doing in the name of journalism is outrageous. And we should really start asking questions. They are, in fact, an impediment to democracy because they are full-fledged partners of deception. And they're doing it unapologetically. They're doing it in the open. And they're doing it at the behest of the very interests that they ought to be subjecting to very close scrutiny. It is outrageous. But we've come to the end of our program today, and I want to thank you so much. It's really, really good. It's very, very important for us to be able to have a forum so we can exchange our thoughts and our concerns and our ideas. And I want to thank you for contributing, because by contributing, you add to the intellectual property here at Lead Stories. Up next is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory. Let's get back here again tomorrow at 1 o'clock and do some more talking on Lead Stories.